All right, so I'm Sarah Literal. The date is March 29th, 2019. It's a little before 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And we are here to talk about the arcade. If you want to go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name is Paul Schomer, and I want to take you back to the year 1949. At that point, I was attending Chaminade High School. Chaminade High School was an all-boys Catholic high school under the direction of the Marianist Order, who also has and presently have the University of Dayton. During that time, as a student, as a freshman in 1949, and then finally beginning in 1950, I was approached by one of the faculty asking if I'd be interested in going to work and being interviewed at the arcade market. What happened at Chaminade at that time, I believe the gentleman's name or teacher's name was Mr. Early. He taught all the senior classes, which was basically six classes. At that time, Chaminade was a point of interest to the local retail merchants in the downtown Dayton area because their school time was generally you were out by 2:30 unless you had any other activities. So they were quite interested in hiring Chaminade students, knowing that they would be able to go to work sometime around 3 o'clock, and most retail stores in the downtown Dayton area stayed open till around 6 o'clock. Except as time passed, they stayed open on Monday nights until 9 o'clock. But going forward, I was asked if I would be interested to go to the arcade. I went in for an interview, and the arcade market located from Chaminade is only about four blocks. Chaminade is located at Ludlow and Washington Street. The arcade is located between 3rd and 4th Street, Main and Ludlow. Those are quite important benchmarks as we go through our review at this time. So I go in as a 14-year-old at that point, and what would happen with an interview, being a young person, what was required in the Dayton area, if you was accepted for employment, you had to get both a work permit, I believe because you were 16 or under. Also, you had to get a health statement from Montgomery County Health Department. Going forward, the people that owned the position I was looking for, the name of the place in the arcade was Walker's. Walker's was owned, and who I eventually went to work for, Mr. and Mrs. Brown and Shell. At that point, when I went in for the interview, you can imagine a 14-year-old trying to, what am I getting myself into? I had been blessed because not only going to school in an all-male environment at that time with high restrictive academic requirements, there was no pressure from there. Also, I had caddied for about 3 years at the Community Country Club at Dayton, so I knew how to interact with seniors or older people. Fortunately, I was hired, and I began going to work sometime early in 1950. Walker's was a stand in the arcade that sold, at that point, fruit juices. The fruit juices consisted of mostly orange juice, and I believe also we sold a small amount of pineapple and grapefruit juice. The orange juice, I'll explain later, was basically strictly just orange juice. Also, they sold frosted malts similar to what Wendy's has today. Now, this is 70 years ago, but they had a machine that used chocolate milk and powder to make frosted malts. When I went to work there, the stand was located at the 4th Street entrance coming into the arcade. Referring back, you have to understand the main entrance to the arcade was at 4th Street, 3rd Street, and Ludlow. The 3rd and the 4th Street had most of the people coming in, particularly the 3rd Street, because at that point the transit systems had passed from streetcars to trolleys. the trolleys stopped right at the arcade entrance. On the 4th Street was only a door entrance. The other transportation system was on 5th Street and Main Street. So place yourself at the prime location of the arcade. One of the busiest entrants was from McCroy's. At those days, we used to call them the dime stores. Downtown Dayton had five and dime stores. You got to remember now, this is 1970, where your parents were only making $2 to $3 at most an hour, working for General Motors NCR. I started working at Walker's for 40 cents an hour. So as you pass through this thing, you're going to find out that the McCroy's entrance was very heavily traveled into the arcade. Going back to the Walker's facility, I worked usually around 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock on the days assigned. What happened at the time I was hired, another young student by the name of Dick Krug went to work there almost simultaneously. The reason for that is because the school activities and the demand for having people available, that's the hours we worked. So on Saturday, you work from like 9 o'clock in the morning roughly until 6 o'clock. The job consisted of, it was hard work really, because being a young person, what you had to do was make the orange juice during the day, which consisted of taking like a gallon of orange juice, and I'll tell you how that's made later on, pouring it into like a 2-gallon container, and then pouring it into the units that were on the counter that were the dispensing units that were refrigerated. I can't remember with ice or just cold. But anyway, beyond that, you had to do all the clean up, all the spoons and containers that were used. Most of the juices were served in cone-like containers that set down into metallic units. So you had a throwaway item, and you had to make sure they were clean. The Shells and Brown were strict on, it was like an operating room, strict on cleanliness. Absolutely. From the day one I worked there to the last day, they were very strict on it. So overall, that job was quite demanding. You had to deal with and serve the public all day long, and it was a heavily traveled. You'll find out as I show you some busy material here or other material that the arcade was a mass of people continuously all day long, every day. And the reason for that is when you go back in that time frame in Dayton, the hub of Dayton was the courthouse, going back to Abraham Lincoln. From that point on, downtown Dayton had grown. The arcade was not only a building. What made the arcade was the people that used the building. From 1902, it was built. In 1904, it became active, up until the 1980s. Beyond that point, when you look at the surrounding area around the arcade, you had merchandisers. You had people like the women's stores, Lerner's, Donenfeld's, Stahl's. You had the Metropolitan men's store. I'm starting now with the Lillery's. The big people were Reich's. The benchmarks for downtown Dayton during that time frame from 1940 to the 50s when I was attending Chaminade, those stores were the benchmarks. Reich's, we known it as Reich's Kummler, that was another place that people attended. You had a whole line of nickel and dime stores along Main Street. In addition to the arcade, you had all these other retail stores. Across the street on Ludlow was Dayton Daily News. Two papers were published there. You had the Keith Theater on 4th Street. You had the State Theater on Ludlow Street. And I'm just throwing these names out because the arcade was the cornerstone of downtown Dayton. And there was thousands of people that worked downtown. And going through the arcade history, what you found out that anybody that had lived in this surrounding Dayton area, 95% of the people had been to the arcade in their lifetime during that time frame, without a doubt. Going back to the arcade itself, when you entered from the 4th Street entrance, there sat a blind lady all the time I ever went through the arcade with a big black dog, probably a German Shepherd of Draga, her C&I dog. She sat there all the time I ever worked there. You move on down the aisle, you move past Walker's. At that point, we were next to or close to Culp's. Culp's Cafeteria was a place that thousands of people in a year ate there. Culp's now still exists at Corian Park. That's the same company that has been passed on down. As you pass on in the arcade, Walker's, we had a prime location where we worked. So most people that came in the 4th Street entrance stopped by or it began there. If you didn't eat at Culp's, you had a choice to eat at Walker's to get a drink. But what happened in the arcade, you had against the wall, the southeast corner was Knoll's, a meat market. Cole's not only sold all fresh meat, they also sold sandwiches. So you could go pick up a sandwich at Cole's, come back to Walker's and get a drink. And the people there allowed anybody to come up to the counter and have a fresh fruit drink and have their meal. Mm-hmm. Going along the north wall was a fish market. The fish market sold not only fresh fish, but they also sold fish sandwiches and French fries. So what could happen if people come into the arcade, could pick up sandwiches, go pick up a drink. So the Walkers had a great thing going for them. Along with that, the arcade at the time, and I can't re-quote all the names, but my aunt worked at a the holidays, particularly making fruit baskets by a company that was located near or a stand. They called them stands, located by the East 3rd Street entrance. And this particular place sold all fresh fruit and vegetables. The arcade was filled with all fruit, vegetables, baked goods, pretzels, candy, and along the outer edges were commercial stores. Down coming in from the 3rd Street entrance was the same thing. Eventually, there was a grocery store at the 3rd Street entrance, but there was small, like as I vaguely remembered, like small jewelry stores or small clothing stores, whatever, at the 3rd Street entrance. The 4th Street, the Ludlow Street entrance was probably a feed-in from like the people that worked Daily News, the retailers, the city buildings were at 3rd, and they still exist at 3rd, and Ludlow Street is a municipal building. So all those people surrounding that area and for three or four blocks around all went through the arcade at some point. To get on mass transit, which most people rode those days because families didn't have cars, they came downtown Dayton. The habit of using the arcade is an easy thing to understand. Most of the immigrants came here from countries that had markets in Italy, Germany, and England, Scotland, Ireland, places where all our families have come from, they were used to outside markets. The other reason arcade was a prime location is because the local groceries couldn't keep produce. They couldn't afford to stock their stores with produce. In Dayton, in the early 50s, there was no supermarkets. The supermarkets in Dayton began basically with the liberal markets, who were owned by the Shear family, who were people that created local supermarket. Kroger started like out on where I was raised in East Dayton and out on East on Linden and Springfield come together. Kroger started out with a small store that you couldn't hardly turn around in. Liberal built a brand new store on East 3rd Street when they were coming into their prime. But people still were in the habit of going downtown Dayton and stopping in the arcade to take home fresh fruit and vegetables. But that habit was already created not long before I ever went to work in the arcade. But at the time before I ever went to work there, everybody would cut, like when I left Chaminade for work there, you would leave Chaminade, walk through the arcade in the winter months because you wouldn't get out of the cold, mm-hmm. and wait on the bus that came at a certain time. It only made sense. But at the stand at Walker's, what happened there, they hired, besides us two guys from Chaminade, they hired, other young girls from from Kaiser High School, Roosevelt High School, Julianne High School, St. Joseph Commercial, Wilbur Wright. I'm naming all those because they don't exist anymore in Dayton. Mm-hmm. And Julianne and St. Joe's Commercial was a two-year high school down by St. Joseph Church for girls that wanted to go into business. But Julianne and St. Joe's, obviously, their school time was like ours, so they hired young people. So Mr. Brown and Mr. Shell, they wanted to make sure they were always covered, so they always had students working. In addition to, I can't remember the two ladies, they had two full-time ladies that worked there. And I thought they were older, but they probably only in their late 20s, early 30s. But going forward with that, as time passed, the Walkers got relocated. They renovated the arcade, and when they did that, it was around 1950, between 51 and 52. I don't remember the exact time. Walkers hit the jackpot. They doubled in size of their stand. They were moved up near the McCroy's entrance, so they hit the jackpot. So they had wall-to-wall customers at the same time, and I have a personal picture here showing myself making hot dogs because they didn't sell those sandwiches ahead of that. The hot dogs cost 15 cents.
Wow.
And the fruit drinks probably cost 10 cents. Mm-hmm. A malt cost maybe 25 cents.
Yeah.
But what happened there, and you see from the picture, it's wall-to-wall people. The arcade was literally like going to UD football or basketball game. I mean, just, it was always full of people. But a warm comment is out across from the arcade or where I worked, two things. One, there was a popcorn stand operated by a lady by the name of Mary Perkins. She was a single lady that raised three boys and a girl selling popcorn between our stand, and she had been there long before we got moved. But Mary knew everybody. What if you worked in the arcade, eventually you knew a cross section of Dayton people, because when you served people, you'd get it, particularly when weren't really busy, you held conversation with them, so you met everybody.
Yeah,
I mean, whoever lived in Dayton eventually had gone to the arcade. Mary Perkins was a very special lady. Her one son, Babe Perkins, was one of the best athletes that ever attended Dayton High School. He played football and basketball at Chaminade. His brother, John, served during the Korean War. I worked at the Walkers from 1950 until early 1953. But during that time frame, the Korean War started. The Korean War started on June the 28th, 1950, and lasted till about April 1953. So think about that. We only 5 years had passed, and we were sending people off to war again. Mm-hmm. Mary's one son, John, got sent to Korea. I addressed packages for Mary going to John. 54,000 people got killed in Korea. Mm-hmm. But going forward, as time progressed in that environment, what happened as time passed, some of these same people came back home, and Mary knew a lot of them.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember meeting some of them, guys that had served that earned a Purple Heart. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, but it's quite a memory.
Absolutely. We're able to stop if you'd like and take a minute.
Yeah. But no, that was a tough time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But going forward, I'm ready to go again.
Okay.
But going forward, during that time frame, the Browns and the Shells were just great people to work for. They were conscious of their help in a time period where we were young. Obviously, I was started at 14 and worked for those folks until I turned 17. But during that time frame, going back to the Oranges, they actually made their orange juice. I worked in a facility with them for out off of where the Wright Brothers Museum is, out off of West 3rd Street. They had a facility in an old building almost in an alley right in that same general location. What we had to do, I worked with Mr. Brown, particularly Mr. Shell, had some health issues. And they had a brother-in-law, and all I remember is his name, Bob. He and his wife used to come in early at the arcade and open up the stand. And then other help came in later. But anyway, how that juice was made was actually just from oranges that you cut. I cut hundreds, thousands of them probably. And they made concentrate with no additives. And what happened, that was brought back to the arcade. In the arcade, part of my job was, at the end of the day, around 5:30, you went down and you went over near Knowles, back in that southeast corner, down the south. It was like a dungeon in the basement of the arcade. It reminded you, I've been to the catacombs in Rome, it reminded you of that. So their facility, they had walk-in coolers to store both all their raw material, which basically was raw orange juice. It had to be refrigerated. It had to be protected. And then your paper products. So you'd go down around 5:30, load up the inventory for the next day, including gallons of the fruit, mm-hmm. along with the paper products. You'd haul them through the catacombs, out to a freight elevator that was along an alley. There's an alley between the main 3rd Street entrance and the arcade. It's still there today. Runs from Ludlow Street to Main Street. At that point, there was a big freight elevator that you took. I had a flat cart with wheels, wheels on, probably about 3 or 4 feet wide and 5 or 6 feet long. It was a monster to push around. Loaded that baby up, took it up to the stand, unloaded it, then it was trash time. In those days, you didn't have plastic containers. You had to clean them, take the trash, dispose it. You can imagine with fruits and ice cream all day, what the containers were. Take them back down the freight elevator with the empty gallon containers. Stop, wash, scrub out trash containers, back to the freezer, put the cart back in place, and go on back up, and by now it's time to go home. It's 6 o'clock. You've done your duties for the day. So when you think about what you did, and that went on from 1950 to 1953, what happened to me in the meantime, the Korean War, we're back to Korean War. You knew when you graduated from Chaminade High School in 1953, you're off to war. In July of 1952, I turned 17 years old. I talked to my dad and said, "Dad, I'm going to get drafted the day I walk out of Chaminade High School." At that point, everybody didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. Most students at that time frame were going to the military or go to work at GM and or NCR. Or if you're really lucky, you went to Wright Pat. Thousands of people worked at those locations. 27,000 at GM, 10,000 or more at NCR. Wright Pat is still the largest hire of people in the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. Anyway, So I talked my dad into joining the Naval Reserve. At that point, I had a cousin, a lifer, a 20-year man in the Navy, was stationed here at in Dayton. My cousin actually signed me up. My dad had signed for me because I'm only 17 years old. So I'm in a senior in high school. I got a job, GRK. I'm ready in the Navy. And then I'm thinking, well, I don't know I'm going to go on active duty. Odds are I'm going to go quick if that war don't end. So anyway, in the meantime, I talked to a great uncle of mine that lived on Bell Street in East End where I was raised. He worked at the NCR, and I went down and asked him if he's got any thoughts where I could go to work. With his effort, through one of his sons who was handing out work to the local job shop, who are tool and die shops, Majestic Engineering, through their son, I got a job in early of around March or April of 1953. So I'm a senior in high school. I've already got three jobs. I'm working at the arcade. I'm already going to Navy Reserve training, and I'm starting an apprenticeship. Well, the plus of that, Mr. Brown and Mr. Shell are very grateful. They saw a person that was headed someplace. Mm-hmm. At that time, then, what happened, Mr. Early, how things get unannounced to you. Civics class, he knew every senior by name. We had about 170 seniors in that class of 53. I go into class one day after I had changed jobs, working, instead of going to the arcade at 2:30, I'm going to work in a job shop up on Steele Avenue. These people did tool and design work for NCR, Chrysler, Air Tempt, which was another GM plant.
Yeah.
So here I am on the drawing board, learned to be a tool designer, and also had to take side courses because Sean and I didn't have machine shop. I had to eventually do that. And the downtown high school at that time was Parker. It wasn't Patterson.
Okay.
But anyway, in doing this, I go to a class one day, and I don't know who all he did it for. He makes the announcement publicly, and I'm scooting down in my chair. He said, Mr. Shell called me from Walker's, and he said, I want another student just like the one that left here. Mm. So somebody got my job. But anyway, as time passed then, the arcade was still a place as I served my time in the tool and die industry, and later on another Joyce Cridlin in Dayton, automobile lift company other than the Naval Service. I spent over 40 years in another field that has a whole history to it. Beyond all that, I got married during the time I was during the Navy. I got married when I was on active duty in October 13th, 1956, and we raised four sons, and I told you, including our special grandson here, living in Dayton and working here. But for a few years, we still visited the arcade. And I still was able to meet up with Mary Perkins.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
You know, the lady still was present. But when you look at all that background and you say, well, why did that arcade exist so long? Well, it was a family tradition.
Yeah.
People went there because you went there as a child. Long before I ever worked there, I'd visit the arcade many a time. If you were to go downtown Dayton, where did you meet? Mayor's Jewelers on the corner of 3rd and Main. The next stop was Reich's Coomer Company. You walked down one block and you met in front of Reich's before you fought through the crowd to get into Reich's. I mean, there was crowds. If you went to the theater in those days, you went to Lowe's, State, Keith's, and the theaters at downtown. You have to remember that what happened in that time frame, that there was no such things as going to the shopping centers out in the outskirts. Mm-hmm. What I didn't add to the story, Arthur Bierman, who you young folks might remember, we had Bierman's stores here in Dayton. Mm-hmm. They just closed up here within the past year or two. The story with that is Arthur Bierman was a developer in Dayton. The man had the arcade and owned it at one time.
Okay.
So at the last, in 52 and 53, before I left, Mr. Bierman used to come through there. And I think what happened, he bought the facility as a developer. The man was a knew how to sell, knew how to retail, knew everything about, and you'll find out in reading some history on him, he got his training as a retail merchant but became a developer. When he owned the arcade, I think what he did, he leased the facilities. At the same time, he had an interest on your gross sales. So what you would see him doing, and he literally passed our stand, and he may have stopped at times. I don't remember. He dressed real dapper with the $50 suits at those times. And what he was doing, I think, was monitoring the money being taken in. He knew at noontime, I passed through here at prime sales time or during the holidays. He knew that there was so much movement going on, so he was a sharp businessman. Mm-hmm. He was able to keep an eye on his business. But he actually developed the first shopping centers in Dayton out in McCook's area, in West Town, East Town. Mm-hmm. He was actually the prime developer of the shopping centers. He eventually built a store downtown Dayton, and he kind of kicked himself because the fact that Reich's finally closed down and he had to close his downtown store, which was right behind the courthouse. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of a little tidbit on him that I don't even know how it's recorded, but he actually had possession of the arcade at one time.
Wow.
Which is a side story on it.
Yeah, I don't think either of us knew that, so that's very helpful.
You'll find out if you research it. But in essence, when you walk through that whole history, I feel strongly about the fact I was given the opportunity, number one, to be here with you young folks today. And I have a great pride and interest in the University of Dayton. I've been their big UD fan for years. I can walk you through their history going back to Tom Blackburn, 1951, attending the NIT. Dayton has been in NIT 25, 26 times, more than any other university in Dayton. They have held more NCAA tournaments than any other place in the whole country. And going back to their original team, Don Monicky was an All-American center on that team. Chuck Grisby was on that team. Pete Boyle was on that team. Razor Campbell, his name was Dick. I played basketball with him on the street up in Huffman School in the East End. He'd come over and play basketball with us. Von Taylor, UD Dayton. Mm-hmm. Most everybody that built that history goes back to the 1950 team forward. Blackburn was there a couple years earlier, and they were still playing in the Coliseum. They built the campus, the field house, which is still there. It packed 5,600 people for about 15 years or so. The university arena now was built about 50 years ago, 13,000 people that they filled almost every game since it opened.
Yeah.
But the earlier history was in the field house on the campus. It's still being used, as I say, still being used. Mm-hmm. But that history put Dayton on the map again. The Wright brothers put them on the map. The Ketterings put them on the map. But UD basketball, anytime you see the announcers come in here, they talk warmly about you guys' school.
Yeah.
It's just...
Well, it's your school, too.
Pardon me?
It's your school also.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It kind of adopted. I did attend there some classes after I got out of the Navy, but family commitments and work commitments, I never finished. But coming through World War II, and this goes back to date, the arcade flourished during the 50s. Mm-hmm. What happened, you think back again, World War II, which we lived through. I was born during the Depression, lived through World War II. I just went through Korea, which is still in existence. Think about that. Mm-hmm. Here it is, 2019, and we still have 40,000 troops in Korea, and it's in the news regularly.
Yeah.
It's not over yet. And it never really was called a war, which it was, with a heavy loss of lives. But in any event, so you move through Korea and then forward other conflicts, and the arcade finally died out, as I recall, in the 80s. Then it was used for local events, wedding receptions, and Mike deals heavily with the Dayton community, having conferences, whatever there. Unfortunately, it died and it run down, and a lot of different organizations tried to buy into it. They owed the county $500,000 or $600,000 or something. So we're blessed now it's coming back to life. I don't know the details on that. I'll finally learn them probably through Michael or Mike. But it's a blessing it's coming back to life, because you think about it, it's Dayton heritage. Yeah. I don't know how close your families were able to use it because of the time frame, but as I said, if you never went to the arcade, you just didn't go downtown Dayton. And I kind of wrap it up at that point, unless you have any questions, either one of you.
We can ask questions on